my take on Sanchez is he who we thought Kyle Schwarber was going to be? This is kind of, I don't know if that's a hot take or not.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 139 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball perspectives fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer for sunshine.com, aka Baseball Perspectives. I'm here with my usual co-host. We got Brett Sayer, BP's managing editor, Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Gentlemen, what's going on tonight? How are you?
Good. Good. Getting ready for the BP event, City Field, on Saturday. So it should be a good time.
That's gonna be awesome. Apparently have to leave here at like 8 in the morning so that I can, you know, make sure not to miss the subway from, miss the 7 from Manhattan to Queens, apparently.
That's true. You don't want to miss that.
It's too bad the event isn't in Atlanta, because then you could have raced the freeze. Who do you think wins in a foot race between you guys?
Between me and Mike?
Yes. Who do you think wins that race?
Mike, absolutely. Well, Mike actually runs.
I run, although I don't run fast. I just run for distance, but I probably would still win.
Yeah, well, I don't run fast or run at all.
I'm like 4 or 5 inches taller than you, so I've got like that too. I've got the leg.
Oh. Yeah, you've got longer strides.
Yeah,
that's true. What if you gave Brett a head start? Do you think you'd still beat him?
I'm not the freeze, so no. I think Brett, if he had that much of a head start,
nice.
I think Brett would.
Nice. All right, so we have a pretty awesome show we're doing tonight. Each of us picked 5 players, and we're going to talk about them as a group. We're going to discuss their future, looking a little bit past the All-Star break, and we'll talk some dynasty value a little bit, too, on some of these guys, because that's a little relevant. But it's going to be a cool show. But first, I want to start off because we got some reviews on iTunes, and I wanted to take a moment here to read these most recent ones. This first one is from May, and it's from someone named Ryan LR. Now, I take it he's not a big fan of the program, because he gave us a 1 star, and the title of the review is, "Please Stop." It says, "Please stop talking about labor and your silly expert leagues. No one cares about NFBC or whatever league you are in. I couldn't care who went for $5 in this week's fab in labor. Just stop it. Please stop and offer some actual analysis on fantasy effing baseball." And he goes on. There's more. So thank you, Ryan.
We were going to talk about other stuff. I think we should just talk about labor for an hour.
We could do that. You picked up Kevin Gausman, right? He's pitching well.
Can we get Gray back on? Because some listeners really loved Gray Albright. So we could do that for an hour, too.
Now, on the other end of the spectrum, we did get another recent review, and this one was a 5-star. I really like this one. This is from SDW5002. He or she says, "Listen to way too many fantasy podcasts that get so caught up in advanced stats that they become dry and droning. Not this one. Next level thoughts and analysis without putting me to sleep. Thanks, boys." Awesome review. That's what we're looking for. If you subscribe to the podcast, if you listen to us every week, you enjoy it, make sure you go out to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave us a review. It helps us out tremendously, and it cancels out all the negative 1-star reviews that some people feel compelled to leave. All right, that's my 2 cents. I'm done with that. Let's talk some players, guys. What do you say? Want to just dive right into this stuff?
Let's do it.
All right, cool.
Sure.
All right, let's... Actually, we should probably talk about Franklin Barreto before we do this, right? Because he just got called up.
Just let our listeners know, we're for the most part skipping my fab review this week, but I agree with you, George. We shouldn't skip Barreto. We should at least talk about him a little bit before we dive into our main topic.
Right. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. We're going to be off next week for the 4th of July, so we might not get the chance to talk again for a while. So, yeah, Jed Lowry's dealing with a knee issue. The A's have all kinds of injury issues. And Barreto got called up on Saturday over the weekend, hit a home run his first game. He's an interesting player because I think he can impact a number of categories. But I'll throw it to you, Mike, first to talk a little bit about bid strategy, and then Brett for more of the scouting angle on what we should expect for Barreto. But, Mike, how would you approach a fab bid for Franklin Barreto, and how relevant do you think he's going to be the rest of the year?
Well, I you know, my thing with Barreto, so obviously in an only, you, if he's available, you want to be fairly aggressive. You know, it's kind of tricky about Barreto, and I did the call for him on the fantasy side, and I talked about this. He's realistically taken just about anywhere, but if for some reason you're in a weird AL only where he's available, and or, you know, if you can't like pick up minor leaguers, I would bid at like 30 or so. In a mixed league like Labor, he went for 18. I think that's okay. I might have bid a little bit less than that, like in the $15 range. My thing with Barreto is I'm not sure how long he'll be up, and that's where I'm kind of hedging with this a little bit. You know, I bid a lot on Derek Fisher last week, and some in Labor AL, and some people are like, oh, he's going to get sent down. You know, he's not going to be up for very long, or you know, that was true. But unlike Barreto, given Fisher's age and given where the Astros are, I think he'll be back sooner rather than later. Hmm. With Barreto, it's entirely possible you're just looking at him up for a week or two, and he gets sent down, and they don't bring him back up until August or September. The A's aren't contending. So it's a different situation. You know, we never know. I mean, maybe he'll be up for like the next 2 or 3 months, but I just feel like there's enough variables there. While there's the talent is certainly great and the upside is there, I just don't want to put too much fab on a guy where, you know, I'm left holding the bag.
Yeah, Barreto's a guy that I know you and Ben Carson, when you put together your preseason fantasy prospect list, he's a guy I know you've had pretty high the last couple of editions that have come out. So what are your expectations from a fantasy impact side on what Barreto can do the rest of the year?
I mean, this year is just a total crapshoot. You know, Barreto came out hot out of the gate in AAA, but you know, he had a 714 OPS in May. He had a 665 OPS in June in the PCL. So this is not someone who is who's setting the minor leagues ablaze. You know, he also has a very high strikeout rate for his profile. I think eventually that will come down. I think eventually he'll be able to hit for average. I think he'll hit for a little bit of power. He can. You know, he can steal a couple of bases, but he's never really been a particularly successful base stealer. This year, I think in terms of playing time, I think his playing time is a little bit safer than I think Mike does. You know, I tend to default to the, you know, teams don't call up their best prospects to, you know, to come up for a week and then go back down. It's not common. And you know, we just saw the Brewers do it with Lewis Brinson, so obviously it's not a fail safe approach. But you know, given what Oakland is putting out there and the positions that Barreto can play if they want him to, and the positions that Jed Lowry can play if he stays healthy, I think he's back in the lineup tonight. But I do think there's a better than 50-50 chance that Barreto stays up the rest of the year. At least in a way that his performance he can put himself in a position to stay up with his performance. You know, I think my gut tells me that he'll be one of those batters that, you know, at first round through the league has sort of an inflated BABIP and shows a little bit more power than he probably will down the line. But then the swing and miss kind of gets to him as pitchers adjust. So, you know, I don't know that my overall expectations are super high for 2017, but he doesn't turn 22 until spring training next year. So, you know, this is not a polished prospect. He's not a finished product, but he has a chance to be a very good fantasy player down the road.
Yeah, I remember some of the discussions on Tino over the last couple of years, the other podcast here at BP with Ben and Craig and yourself, that one of the big positive aspects of Barreto's profile is his athleticism, that maybe he's a guy who he has the speed and maybe it translates into more steals down the line. So I think it's fascinating in terms of what he could do because he's so athletic, but you're right. I wouldn't be holding my breath for a huge impact this year. The other random piece of news over the last couple of weeks is the injury to Julio Urias. I mean, there's not much of a fantasy takeaway for that, but just listening to some of the stuff about the surgery and I don't know. That's a real bummer, at least for me. That one hurts because you thought he was going to be the guy who kind of stayed healthy based on how they were treating him, but man, that one sucks. All right, so let's talk some players here. We're gonna talk all players this show. This is a kind of a special edition we're doing because we're off next week, so for the 4th of July, and then we'll come back the week after. But let's start with you, Brett. And the way we did this exercise was we all texted each other five names. We sent out a tweet and we asked for listener feedback for players that you want us to talk about. So we have a couple of those names we're going to get to later on in the show. But let's get to our guys first. And Brett, who's the first player that you want to talk about here tonight?
First guy I want to talk about is George Springer. Springer's had a very nice season so far. Mike, do you have your most recent 2017 valuations in front of you? Maybe that'd be a good thing to throw out there for each of these players.
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay. So, Springer is, I wanted to talk about him because he's sort of completed the transformation into the player we thought he was going to be, into the player he is. And the player he is someone with a lot of power, not as many strikeouts as I think a lot of people feared from his minor league totals, but someone who is deathly afraid to steal bases, and for good reason. Springer was talked about and still is thought of in some circles, at least especially coming into the season, as someone who could potentially be a 30 homer, 20 steal guy. In 2015, in his debut, he was 16 for 20 in stealing bases in 102 games. So he was certainly pacing for it then. But he was 9 for 19 on the base paths last year, and he's 0 for 3 so far this year. He has zero stolen bases. So while that part is definitely a bummer and certainly not what people were hoping for coming into the year, even if you were realistic about his stolen base potential. I mean, I have him in tout, and I thought he could get to 10 to 15 steals. It certainly doesn't seem like he's going to get there now, but Springer was consistently around the 30% strikeout rate in the minors. He has been under 25% each of his major league seasons. He's at 22.7% this year, which is the best of his career. He's swinging at fewer pitches outside the zone. He's making less contact outside the zone, which means he's making harder contact when he is making contact. So, not only are the counting stats great being in Houston, but the power is really developing in a way that I think he... even with the inflated home run to fly ball rate, it's over 30%. It's not going to stay there. But with the home park and his profile, I think he's proving that he is, a 35 to 40 home run guy. And the batting average is going to be better than people were worried about. It's 280 right now, and he has a very sustainable BABIP. His BABIP is actually at a career low right now. It was 304. So, 280, 35 to 40 home runs. Even if he doesn't steal bases, I think Springer is still looking at this season and many future seasons of very high fantasy value, but just in a little bit different of a way than we uh, than we originally thought. Do you guys have any thoughts on Springer?
So on Mike's valuations, which are updated through, I believe it's June 10th, right, Mike? The last update.
Yeah, I'll be putting out another one at the beginning of the month of July. So, yeah, it's a little more current than I would have expected, but still a little out of date at this point.
Yeah, but Springer is still a top 10 outfielder in the American League, on pace for to earn $26. So you're talking about maybe a $30 outfielder, which is really good, even without speed.
Yeah, well, what's his average right now? Like, I mean,
280.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Springer, I think, is just to add to, from a valuation perspective, you know, without steals, and unless he's hitting 300, it's going to be tough for him to get past 30, particularly in this, you know, context where so many people are hitting home runs.
He has a lot of runs.
But it's still an elite player, but he's not going to, you know, he's not going to come close to sniffing 40.
Right.
So if he does this the rest of the year and pretty much finishes at about, you know, 275 average, 40 home runs, what overall pick do you think he is in labor next year?
You said 275 and 40?
Yeah. So he's on pace for almost 50 home runs. Let's assume he gets to 40, which is more realistic for him.
My instinct is back of the first round, which would be like 14 or 15. And that's without like looking at everybody else and trying to put together a ranking. He could go higher because I know some people love Springer, but that's probably where I'd just instinctively put him without, you know, putting together a ranking of 15 guys.
Okay.
Do you think that's too low or too high or?
I was thinking sort of in the 15 to 20 range. So
yeah, it's a little high.
Similar spot. Mike, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's tough for him to be that elite without stealing really at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Hopefully it comes back. I mean, he's kind of got the yips, but he's got the stolen base yips.
The stolen base yips. You don't hear about those yips very often.
No, you definitely don't. But it's really not. It's fascinating because it was always a thing he was, you know, pretty good at. He this season, I mean, we say he's 0-for-3 on the second day of the season on April 4th. He attempted two steals, was caught stealing twice, and didn't attempt another stolen base for 2 months exactly.
Steals are a big mystery. I was. For an article I have coming out on Thursday, I was like looking at positions, and steals are so weird. Like how some guys you'd expect to have a few don't, and like Yadier Molina, for example, has 5, and that leads catchers. Like there's just some weird stuff going on with stolen bases.
Cameron Maben leads the American League in steals. He's a guy I want to talk about later, but
I was gonna say you're stealing your own thunder.
No, he's been so good. I was just looking at Springer's minor league numbers. He had in 2013, he stole 45 bases between AA and AAA. So if I had told you then, Brett, in 2013, that George Springer within 4 years was not going to steal a single base, you would have told me I was nuts, right?
Yeah, not a single base. I would have told you you're nuts.
Baseball is weird, man. Mike, who's your first guy?
Let's talk about a guy you and I have talked about, George, as he's in Boston, Hanley Ramirez.
Oh, God.
I can already hear your – I say you're in Boston, you're Rhode Island, but you know what I mean. Well, so I can already hear your frustration.
The takes are so hot on sports radio right now with Hanley. They are scorching.
Well, so I have to say, though, I watched Hanley after you and I discussed him a couple weeks ago, and, like, you're right. Like, he – the bat speed looks okay, and he looks fine, but he just looks thick, you know. And I don't mean that in the, you know, thicc way. Like he looks like big and bulky, and he just looks like somebody who, even as a DH, is not going to age particularly well. And maybe we should have known this about Hanley. You know, I remember, Brett, when, you know, you and I had Hanley a couple of years ago. I think it was in labor, and I had him in 2013 in tout. And he was one of those players, like, you always kind of held your, you know, you bit your tongue a little bit when he wasn't playing or he was hurt, because you're like, you know, he's going to have one of those like 5 or 6 week periods where he just carries your team. And, you know, he hits a bunch of home runs and, you know, and hits 350. He doesn't run anymore, so you don't have that. But I was like, well, you know, whatever. Like, he's going to do those things that make me happy. And now I look at Hanley and I see a guy where it's like, you know, you might be looking at a player who doesn't do that anymore, where he still manages to play 110, like 120 games, but doesn't have the big streak. Like, he did have a streak a month ago where he hit a few home runs, but it just wasn't sustained. You know, he's also dealing with shoulder injuries, and now his knee is hurt, and they're saying they might not play him against lefties, even as a DH. You know, I bring this all up with Hanley because I kind of feel like, well, there's obviously in a deep league you hold on to him. Like, I have him in labor, AL. There's no way I'm going to drop him there. But if you're in a 12-team mixed league, and Brett, while you were gone, George and I discussed, you know, first baseman last week a little bit, where Hanley's eligible from last year. I feel confident there are enough first basemen out there in that kind of league where if you want to drop Hanley, you should feel free to do so. You shouldn't have a fear that that's going to come back to bite you. He looks like a hitter to me where, while he can still be productive in spurts, that production just isn't going to be what it was. And I have a fear that the decline with him is going to be steep when it happens.
Yeah, I fear that it is too.
I know you like him.
I do. The thing with him is that it's the streak has to come, or else you're right. He's not a viable play in anything other than a medium or a deep mixed league. And you know that there's enough concern where I have him in an 18 team dynasty league, and I sat him this week for Elias Gurriel. That's sort of where I am on Hanley at this point. I think he's benchable until he starts to show some sign of life, because, you know, you kind of have to, if he's not going to show the sign of life, then you've at least benched him and gotten some performance somewhere else. If he does, then you can just throw him back in and hope he continues it, because when he does, he shows it for an extended period of time. It's not like a 3 or 4 game thing. It's not like he's kind of similar and kind of dissimilar to Lucas Duda in that manner, where, you know, Duda could be ice cold and then all of a sudden hit 6 home runs in 5 games, and then you bang your head against the wall for having him on your bench. But how Hanley has approached being the DH seems like it could be a real problem. But it is still a little bit early. He's not that old. He's still only 33, so we're not giving up on him, but it's not looking good right now, and I don't think he's a particularly reliable performer the rest of the year.
I mean, just speaking candidly about Hanley, it's an effort thing. It's not a talent thing. That's the issue right now, is does he want to be out there, and does he want to be an elite hitter? Because he has the talent to do it. It's just he's been dealing with injuries, and how much of these are real, how much of it is just Hanley not... It's not like he ran into the, like a couple of years ago, he ran into a wall and hurt his shoulder, you know, but we haven't seen any evidence of, you know, I don't know. It just, something's not right here. And then his refusal to play first base is the most puzzling thing to me.
Well, I think the shoulder injuries are legitimate. Like, you can question how severe they are.
Right.
I don't doubt the injury or the fact that he's playing hurt or he's banged up. You know, he has a career of playing banged up. But I do agree with your point, Brett, which is I don't know how much – like, he can be a good hitter. I've just I get nervous about players like this who have been playing a long time and who came up when they were really young and have an injury history. I know it's anecdotal, but I do feel like guys like this, when they do fall off, and I'm not even saying Hanley is going to fall off, but when they do fall off, you know, you're saying he's only 33, but I've seen guys like this fall off like at 34, 35. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like, I'm not even saying for this year that he's toxic and he's going to disappear. But if it happened, and if he had a really bad second half or he didn't play much in the second half, I wouldn't be shocked. But that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So I'm with you guys. If you're in a shallow sort of mixed league and maybe even a deeper one with all the depth at first base, you can probably move on from Hanley if you had to, which is kind of a shocking thing to say, but this is where we are in a redraft league. We talked about two hitters, so I'll go with a pitcher here for my first guy, and it's going to be a name, if you follow me at all in any of the stuff I've written this year, it's someone I'm very fond of, and that is Alex Wood of the Dodgers. He's just been really fantastic. Since joining the rotation on April 21st, he's made 10 starts. He missed some time due to injury, which you'd have to expect a little bit here with Wood. I think they want to keep him healthy and maybe just giving him some maintenance, you know, DL stints here and there, like the Astros are kind of doing with Lance McCullers. I think that's maybe a good precautionary move. But in those 10 starts, he has an ERA just under 2. In 58 and two-thirds innings. He struck out 71 and only walked 11 batters. He's allowed just 2 home runs during that span. So he's striking out nearly 11 per 9, and he's under 2 walks per 9. And over the course of the season, he has a 2.51 DRA. So everything he's doing is really backed up by the numbers. 68% ground ball rate. He doesn't have a crazy low BABIP. But what I really like about what Wood's done this year is with the arsenal, he's got the two-seam, which has been just a really great pitch for him this year. Not only his ability to spot it, but he's getting a lot of swings and misses on it. 21% whiffs per swing, which is 5th out of 87 starters this year. So tons of ground balls and swings and misses with that, and it helps the effectiveness of the curve and the changeup. So I really like what we've seen from Alex Wood. He's kind of been like Clayton Kershaw almost this year, if you're looking at how Kershaw struggled with giving up home runs and kind of taking a little bit of a step back there. But I mean, Wood's been just as good this year. If you look at his finish on the player rater, he's the number 7 pitcher on ESPN's player rater right now. So I guess my question for you guys is, obviously in the back of your mind, you have to be concerned about the injury risk, but with Alex Wood performance wise, I mean, how high would you be willing to go if you were ranking him the rest of the season? If you're looking at him as a potential trade target, where are you valuing him? Would sort of be my question. Like, how high would you be willing to go in terms of ranking him?
Kind of have to think of him like sort of Rich Hill from last year, where, you know, you expect pretty good performance when he's on the mound, but you just don't expect him to be on the mound the whole rest of the season. I have very little confidence in Alex Wood's ability to stay healthy, but I mean, what he's done this year is real. It's funny. If you look at his career velocity chart, it looks like a V. He started, he averaged 92.5 miles per hour on his sinker or two seamer or whatever. I don't know what he calls it, but
it's call kind it like a two seamer. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was 92.5 miles per hour in 2013. Then it dipped to 90.7, then 89.8, then 91.3 last year. It's been 93.1 miles per hour this year. So that is a very noticeable increase. And given the movement he has on the pitch, you know, that explains the ground ball rate.
Yeah.
His changeup's been effective. He's been using it more than he historically has, and I think that's helping him. I think using the two-seamer slightly less and using the changeup to augment it a little bit more, especially against right-handed pitching, I think has helped him bump up his strikeout rate. So there are, like George is saying, there are very legitimate reasons as to why he is performing the way he is. But that said, he's going to get hurt. He's Alex Wood. He gets hurt. He's going to get hurt. Expecting anything otherwise is just a fool's errand.
So I like that comp where he's like a maybe a slightly more durable version of Rich Hill, where I think maybe I'd expect more innings, but yeah, I'm with you on that. That's actually a pretty good comparison there. Mike, do you have any Alex Wood related thoughts here?
I mean, that's all pretty good. Yeah, in terms of answering your question, top 20, but you know, some of that again is predicated on, yeah, based on what he's done in ability, he could be top 10. And we kind of saw this with Hill. Like thinking about Hill, we ranked him as a 4-star guy last year. And in terms of talent, we knew Hill, at least coming into the year, could be a 5-star guy, but we weren't going to be that aggressive. And the same thing applies to Wood. So I agree with Brett here.
Yeah, Rich Hill's had a really weird year, speaking of strange seasons. Brett, who's your next guy you want to talk about?
The next guy I want to talk about is Anthony Rendon. Rendon has long been a favorite of mine since he was drafted out of Rice, and this year I think he's finally really growing into the hitter that that prospect enthusiasts thought he would turn into, 4 or 5 years ago. He's hitting for average. He's hitting for power. He's got more walks than strikeouts. He has just been really excellent after really not starting the season very strong. I mean, he had a 3-game series in late April at Coors Field where he went 4-for-14 with no extra base hits, and he left Coors Field with a 5.67 OPS. Since then, he is hitting 318, 430, 659 with 34 walks, 26 strikeouts, and 14 home runs. That is Anthony Rendon, elite hitter. This is sort of the, we talked about him being, sort of a Pythagorean hitter, which is, 300, 400, 500 kind of guy. And, while he's not really running, I mean, that's never really been a huge part of the game. He had the one season where he had a bunch of steals. I think he had 17 or 18 steals. I think if you, on the stolen base front, if you get double digits from him, then that's great. You shouldn't really expect more than that. He had the one big year where I think he stole 17 or 18 bases. But that's not realistically a thing that's going to keep happening. But at the plate right now, Rendon has been one of the best natural hitters in baseball for the better part of 2 months. And this is what we wanted. This is what we expected. And I think he is absolutely talented enough to keep this up. So I'm buying the enhanced performance level out of him. We talked about injury for Alex Wood. Rendon had that reputation as an amateur and as a minor leaguer, but he played 153 games in 2014, 156 games in 2016. He's been healthy this year. He hasn't been as brittle as people thought he was going to be. I think he's safe and he's very investable. He's 27 years old. He's going to do this. He's going to do this for a while. He just turned 27 earlier this month. So, I'm all in on Rendon.
I didn't realize he had 14 home runs. That's higher than I thought he had. So very nice. Mike, who you got? Another first baseman. No, I'm kidding.
Well, actually, since we're talking about the Nationals, I think we can stick with the Nationals. And I did select a lot of first basemen, but I went off of of Twitter suggestions, which is why I didn't necessarily, you know, do this on purpose. So Ryan Zimmerman, you know, I have to say it's kind of funny. Zimmerman's a player I was really down on coming into this year. I kind of was recommending staying away from him pretty much everywhere. Even in NL only, I had a very low expectation of him. And this is kind of the other side of Hanley. And it's interesting because I really thought that Zimmerman was at the end of the line and wasn't going to do much of anything. And, you know, as we know, just from watching him, he's not only has he been terrific, he's been one of the best players, you know, not just on the Nationals who are stocked with superstars, but in baseball, you know. And to the point you made, Brett, about Hanley, like Zimmerman, you know, the funny thing about him, he's not old. Like you'd think, like looking at Zimmerman and all the travails he's been through, that he's like 35 or 36. He's 32 years old. He hasn't turned 33 until the very end of the season.
Yeah, he's like my go-to example of the guy who's not nearly as old as you think he is.
Yeah, and you know, this is kind of the other thing, and this is where I feel bad about. You know, I've always said this about injuries, where I'm not a believer in the theory that if a guy is always injured, he's going to keep getting injured. I think it can happen. I don't think it's automatic. I know there's some experts out there. Ron Chandler's been a big proponent of this. I think Ray Flowers has also been a proponent of this. I look at a guy like Matt Kemp and say, you know, Matt Kemp is a player who for years was hurt. And for the last two or three years, he's been the model of health. Like he got hurt this year, but it was a minor injury, but otherwise he's stayed on the field. So it's entirely possible with Zimmerman that while the performance, you know, it already has tailed off, you know, after April where he was just torrid, he's only been an above average first baseman as opposed to like a ridiculously, you know, incredible one. I don't see any reason why Zimmerman can't be that guy, you know, can't be a player who, you know, is a little bit above average at first, hits, you know, about four or five home runs a month with a good batting average. And in that lineup, you pretty much everyone in that lineup, you have to give some value just because of how strong that team is. So I think he can keep it up. I don't see any reason why you would shy away from Zimmerman because of the health, which I think some people will do.
Yeah, I remember vividly during the offseason whenever we talked about Ryan Zimmerman, because Brett, you would bring him up all the time as you were sort of the last man on Zimmerman Island. And I believe my exact words were, I think he's cooked. And I was wrong.
Those were your exact words.
Yeah, I was dead wrong. Turns out he got healthy. He looks fantastic. I mean, from everything I've watched. So yeah, I was dead wrong on Ryan Zimmerman, which is good because he's really good. And it was clearly, I think, everything was health related as far as his struggles. Seems to be the
health really. Yeah, I mean that, and the fact that, you know, the launch angle thing with him is a big deal, and it's a bigger deal than most, because, you know, Zimmerman, for all the ground balls he was hitting the last couple of years, he rated very high compared to where you would think he would rate on exit velocity charts. And now that he's not hitting the ball into the ground a lot of the time, you're seeing the results of what that exit velocity is turning into. So I think there's an easy explanation for why some of this is trickling out. I mean, I think his April was crazy, and that piece is not going to happen again. But, you know, it's easy to look at Zimmerman and see sort of the decline of his OPS since April and be like, okay, he was just superhuman. He's a little Mario Invincible star in April, and then it's just been, you know, normal Ryan Zimmerman from there. But from the beginning of May to now, he's hitting 304, 346, 520 with 8 home runs.
Right.
So you just take his May and June and prorate that over a season, and you're looking at pretty much pre-superhuman Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, that revision.
300 average, 25 home runs. That's, you know, he probably won't play. He probably won't stay healthy for the entire season, just because it's hard to bank on anyone who's on that side of 30 staying healthy for the entire season. But you know, this isn't someone who's just falling off a cliff after a hot April. He's been right. very good.
Well, it's not even like Eric Thames, who, you know, had a really bad May and, you know, it kind of made you wonder, like, that's exactly it. He tailed off, but he tailed off in a way where, yeah, four home runs and a 300 average per month is still really solid. And it could go the other way. He could have another month where he hits seven or eight home runs and hits like 320 or 330 just because he looks legitimate.
Yeah, and he's counting stats too. He's pacing for 100 runs and 100 RBI, even if you take out April. So he's getting it done. He's getting it done all over the place.
He's been very good. So my next guy is Gary Sanchez, the now cleanup hitter for the New York Yankees, with Matt Holliday out the last couple of days. That Judge Sanchez 3-4 combo. That looks pretty good. I'm very excited about that, if they can keep that going. But since coming off the disabled list at the start of May, so this is since May 5th, he's hitting .311 with a .406 on base percentage, slugging .583, 12 home runs, 34 runs, 35 RBI, and 2 steals. He's walking in 11% of his plate appearances. He's striking out only 23% of the time. Now, there are some unsustainable elements to that performance. Like, he's like a 32% home run to fly ball rate, which is wild. He's not going to do that. And he's running like a .350 BABIP. So yeah. But my take on Sanchez is he who we thought Kyle Schwarber was going to be? This is kind of, I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but Brett, I mean, is this kind of what we thought Schwarber was going to do?
To an extent. I mean, Sanchez has been very good, and from a statistical perspective, I think you could definitely make that argument. I mean, the question is, yeah, the question is the batting average. I mean, he's now had two sort of clips of a season where he's hit close to 300. If he's a 280 plus hitter, that just changes the equation on his value completely. You know, I wasn't sold after last year that he wasn't going to be more of a 260 guy, which is still super valuable, a catcher with the power that he has. But if his strikeout rate is going to trickle down and stay in sort of this extremely reasonable range, then yeah, I think maybe he is the guy that we thought thought Schwarber was going to be. And to be perfectly honest, still, we're not going to talk about him today because we've talked about him enough, but I still think Kyle Schwarber can be the guy we thought Kyle Schwarber was going to be, but that's a conversation for another day.
Oh yeah, like Kyle Schwarber could absolutely do this, but I think it goes to the point that maybe Sanchez is exceeding our expectations a little bit, because like you talked about, I think we all viewed him as more of a 260 hitter with 20 home runs, and if he's a 280 hitter with 25 to 30, that changes the game a little bit. I think that sort of justifies that price that everyone paid coming into the year in the early rounds to get him a little bit more. So I don't know, just something to think about. I it feels to me like Gary Sanchez is exceeding our expectations, which I, even an optimist like me on him, I didn't expect. So who are we back to? This is to Brett now. Who's your third guy?
Oh, we're back to me already?
I think so. Yeah, Mike and I are going quick.
I got to go to my cheat sheet. Yeah, this is good. We spent a lot of time on the first couple of guys, and
yeah,
I
think, we'll kind of breeze
moving
through,
quicker through, yeah, the rest of them is a good idea. So I am going to talk about the player who I think is on the quietest track for a 2020 season in baseball, and talk about Josh Harrison, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Right now, Harrison has he's doing his batting average thing, which he almost always does. He's hitting .291. He's got 9 homers and 9 steals, and he has just been extremely consistent from jump this season. He's hitting more fly balls than he has in the past. So even though his home run to fly ball rate is higher than before, it's not it's only 10%. It's not completely unsustainable. I think he probably falls short of 20 home runs, but given how middle infield has shaken out this year, Harrison's been extremely valuable for those who have picked him up, and there's really not a great reason not to expect that he's going to be able to continue what he's been doing. He's swinging a little bit less. He's being a little bit more discerning. He's not striking out anymore, but it seems like he's just waiting for his pitch a little bit more, which is helping him make harder contact. The stolen bases, we talk about the sort of depression of steals. Someone who can steal 20 bases and contribute in other categories is becoming more and more of a unicorn these days. And I like Harrison to be a top 10 second baseman the rest of the way. I have to check. Does he has second base, third base, and outfield eligibility, I believe. But I have to check that because I think that's dependent on the league. Yeah, he's played 7 games in the outfield. He's played, where is it? Yeah, he's played 32 games at third base also. So he's got triple eligibility, which especially in deeper leagues is extraordinarily useful. And Josh Harrison rant.
He's always.
You guys have any thoughts on Harrison?
I mean, it just feels like every couple of years he kind of has that season where he puts together the batting average, power, and speed profile, and then you kind of don't hear anything for a while. And yeah, that's just kind of who he is. But he's had a really great year. He's kind of flown under the radar too. So if you're looking at a potential second half addition, someone you could trade for, I definitely like that name. That's a good call.
I in researching an article I mentioned before, I was surprised by the 9 home runs, just because, in 2015 and 2016, I know you miss some time each year, he had 4 home runs each year. So that surprised me a little bit. The steals didn't, because we know he can steal 15 to 20. So if that power holds, I mean, honestly, at this point, if he only hits like 2 or 3 or more home runs the rest of the way and goes 12, 18, that's still a really solid player. And yeah, Brett, you're right. He's an under the radar, underrated kind of guy.
It's weird that mm-hmm. he's hit, guys are hitting for more power. Like, who would have thought,
Right.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. Weird. Mike, who you got? Who's your next guy?
Let's move away from first baseman and talk about Odubel Herrera.
Ugh.
Noobs.
Well, you have him somewhere, Brett, don't you? Do you have him in labor?
I have him in tout.
Okay. So Odubel Herrera is kind of funny because, there's no way around it. He's having a bad year in fantasy. But the funny thing about Herrera is if you look at what he's done in the last month, and you can't see it because he had such an awful May, he's really turned it around, and he's done it quietly. Now, the funny thing is, as I talk about this, he's being benched tonight. He's not playing. This is Tuesday against the Mariners. And some of the reason for that is because they're facing, a lefty, and it's Paxton. I think it's Paxton, right? And they want to have, as many righties in there as possible. But some of it is kind of the usual stuff. I'm sorry, George.
It is Paxton who struck out 2 in the first inning, so he looks good tonight.
Okay, I didn't realize how late it was. We started later tonight than usual. So, I'm reading this story that Jim Salisbury of CSN put out, and there's just kind of the usual stuff about how Herrera's made mistakes and he has to be smarter, and he didn't. I think it was to drop third strike. He didn't run it out, and there's some other stuff, but I just kind of look past all that with Herrera. I've always really liked him. I've always seen a talented ball player. And, if there's something that concerns me a little bit, it's that the steals have kind of dropped off. He stole 3 bases in April. He's stolen 1 per month after that. My value proposition with Herrera has always been that he's a guy who hits some home runs. Josh Harrison's a good example. Herrera hits some home runs, but he also steals some bases. And as a result, he has value. The other thing, obviously, this year is that the Phillies have just been bad. So, you know, if Herrera is not going to be able to drive in runs or score runs, that impacts him as well. But honestly, I think the player we've seen in June is the player that we can very well see the rest of the way. And Herrera is someone that if he's been dropped in your medium or deeper mixed league, I'd go out and pick him up. I see him having a pretty good second half.
Yep.
I'm with you there. I like Herrera as a solid second half trade target or pickup target if he has been dropped. But the speed, I think the speed will come around, but even if it doesn't fully come around like it did last year, there's still value to be had there.
I think there's so much negativity surrounding him right now and how people view him that actually makes him easier to acquire, because maybe his owner has soured on him a little bit and they're trying to get out. I don't know.
I will tell you, Herrera in Philadelphia, he, you know, and I am here, he's kind of a mini Puig from that attitude sense. Like he seems to attract like the, you know, racist or anti-Latino, like don't celebrate, don't have fun. But there are even Phillies fans who like him, or like, dude, I like bat flips and I enjoy that, and it's great when he hits a home run and he does it. But, you know, when they're down or up or even up by 7 runs and he does it, it's kind of like, all right, dude, like I get it, but at some point, like, it's just not even fun for me anymore, and I like bat flips.
I think
so. There's that whole element to him too.
Yeah, I think he's so talented, he'll figure it out and put it together. I wouldn't be concerned long term. So, yeah, the guy.
You know who those bat flips really aren't fun for?
No,
Mike Schmidt.
Oh God, that's a whole other podcast.
We're not
yes,
going to
go it is.
We're not going to do. Let's not go into. We're not going to do that tonight.
Talk. We could do a Philadelphia Talk Radio podcast in September when we're bored.
We'll break down Angelo Cataldi and all those
oh my God.
Guys.
Howard Eskin and Joel Embiid dunking on Eskin after the draft.
That's still great. Still good.
Gotta get rid of McNabb. Guy sucks.
Takes from 2009. The guy I want to talk about, speaking of putting it all together, Robbie Ray, because I had this sort of discussion with Paul Sporer on Twitter about how how difficult it is to rank Robbie Ray, because there's always that little voice in the back of your head that's sort of screaming, yeah, but he's still Robbie Ray, and it's hard to ignore how many guys he walks, how much hard contact he gives up. Like his start this weekend against the Phillies, he gave up a 2-run homer to Ben Lively, a pitcher. So, I mean, it's kind of weird to look at Robbie Ray, but since May 20th, in 7 starts, he's 6-0, nearly 50 innings. He has a 1.29 ERA, 60 strikeouts, only 17 walks, only 4 home runs allowed. So over 11 strikeouts per inning, and he's kind of doing this weird thing now where he grunts after every pitch. Supposedly it's to help his breathing. I don't know. It seems like it's helped him. And I was watching his latest start, and they had Randy Johnson in the booth, and Johnson, you know, Hall of Famer, talking about how Ray's really just more confident in his stuff and in his ability as a pitcher, and how that's helped him grow a little bit. So I don't know. That seems like it's all, you know, narrative, fluffy cotton candy kind of analysis, but it's really the only explanation we have, because we've always known that Robbie Ray was talented. It just never really showed up because, he'd just give up so much hard contact it would obliterate all the good things. But he's always struck out a ton of guys. He's always had talent. He's always had the stuff. It just feels like finally maybe he has the confidence to put it all together. I don't know. What do you guys think about Robbie Ray? Because it's getting hard to ignore him now. He's pitched so well.
You can have 10 different prices across the internet.
So even someone has an ad up.
Chances are.
What was that?
I was on mute, so it wasn't me.
Oh, that was definitely me.
Okay. Usually it's me, so I feel bad about it.
What was the ad for?
I have no idea.
Okay. I thought it was just, I was looking for like sound coming out of my machine, but it was not.
Yeah, this is why I hate using player pages during podcasts.
They're good player pages, though. So, Robbie Ray.
Good player pages, but not if you want to be on mute.
So, what do you guys have on anything on Robbie Ray? Because I've been kind of impressed.
Robbie Ray is, he's fun, but he is still walking too many guys and still giving up too many home runs. Okay. And it is going to bite him at some point.
But
is the strikeouts are wonderful, though.
But when every pitcher is struggling in the ERA department, I mean, he doesn't hurt you as much as he did 2 years ago. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I feel with him, right?
Sure. Yeah. I don't view him as a top 20 starter.
That's probably fair. Yeah.
Well, you know, the other side of that is that, you know, you mentioned home runs, George, because, and I'm not discounting his strikeout rate, it's really good, but because so many guys are striking out a batter per inning, what he's doing is certainly valuable. It's just not as crazy valuable as it would have been like 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah. And I like Ray more than Brett does, but I do agree that the caveats with him, I probably still would put him on the fringes of the top 20, either one way or the other. But I do feel those caveats apply. And, you know, if you look at the peripherals and particularly the over 4 walks per 9, there's still enough potential for damage or bad starts. And, you know, when you combine that with the fly ball rate and a ground ball rate that's plummeted this year in that park, that there's just too many markers that make me think he's going to put up like a 3.6 in the second half as opposed to an ERA under 3.
Yeah. I just kind of like Robbie Ray a little bit. I like what he's doing.
I do too.
I think he's starting to get it too. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to talk about real quick about Luis Severino and Andrew Miller. Let's start with Severino. This has been one of my favorite surprises of 2017. You know, Severino was a guy that we liked as a prospect, and someone who even last year, after all of those struggles, there was still a glimpse of what could be if for some reason he could get it to click. This year it is clicking, and part of it is that he's pitching with more confidence. He's throwing the slider a little bit more and with a little more bite. His velocity is slightly up and he's holding it. You know, the strikeouts are real, and I don't know whether he's going to hold up as a starter long term, but you know, I think he's at the point now where, I mean, I view him kind of the same way that I view Robbie Ray. I mean, I think they're both kind of outside the top 20 starters. I think they're both going to give you strikeouts. At, you know, the great thing about Severino is that he's pitching for the Yankees, and they're going to win a lot of games with that offense. So that's been a really exciting development, and I think he is showing enough to keep it up. Andrew Miller, I want to bring up because I have no idea what the hell Terry Francona is going to do with that bullpen the rest of the year. And if Andrew Miller is back in a more traditional closer role, then he is going to be far more valuable than he was a couple of weeks ago and than he is now with all of the uncertainty in the role. I mean, you could say the same thing about Cody Allen, who I know just who got the loss tonight against the Rangers. But Cody Allen always kind of walks a little bit of a fine line. That's never been a problem for Francona before. It is a situation that we really need to keep a strong eye on the rest of the season, because whoever pitches the second half as the closer on Cleveland is going to pretty easily be a top 10 closer. Miller might be the number 2 closer in baseball if he's used in a more traditional role. So in terms of valuation fluctuation,
for what it's worth, tonight we're recording this on Tuesday night, Miller pitched the 8th scoreless inning, and then Cody Allen took the loss, gave up a run in the 9th. So just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Just a thought. It's a tight race too.
It
so.
Is unknown.
Yeah.
So I mean, he made the comment that he was using Miller for a little bit in a more traditional role, just so that he wouldn't burn him for multiple innings, just so they didn't overwork him. But yeah, fuck, I don't know. I own Cody Allen in a lot of places, and I'm a little worried. So
hey, I have a question for you guys then. Do you think Chris Devensky is a better option to close than Ken Giles?
No. Okay. I wouldn't use Chris Devensky as a closer if I were Houston.
I still prefer Giles. I think they're close, but I'd rather have Devensky in that multi-inning role.
They've kind of used it. I mean, they used him in multi-innings on Sunday, but he picked up a save last week, and then he pitched one inning the next day. So he's kind of done both. I kind of like him as the ninth inning guy. He's tough to pick up, like, because he doesn't throw that hard. So I don't know. Mike, who are your last two guys?
Aaron Nola and Carlos Santana. So my quick point about Nola is that we've kind of gone from a guy that people were kind of quasi excited about to a pitcher who at this point is maybe flying under the radar a little bit too much. The injury he had this year wasn't something that was arm related. He's looked good since he's come back from it. He struck out almost a batter per nine in June. I know it's a small sample, but I just don't want people to forget about Nola. And this, again, is a Phillies thing. I know the Phillies right now are bad. I know there are a lot of players on that team that people are rightfully overlooking. But there are guys like Herrera and Nola who should not be simply discarded or tossed aside, particularly in Roto or Dynasty Leagues. That was my primary point on Aaron Nola. I still like him. He's still really young. I don't see any reason why, you know, Aaron Nola should be treated kind of like he's being treated by some, which is like a back-end starter and somebody who isn't worth considering. So Carlos Santana, you know, Carlos Santana is kind of funny because he's having, you know, what looks to me like a down year. But he's a player who last year's power, the 34 home runs, was more of a fluke than anything else. And even though he's a player who tends to fluctuate and go up and down and back and forth, I don't see any reason why he can't bounce back and kind of put together his usual like 20, 25 home run year. 25 at this point might be a little bit aggressive. Average isn't going to be there, but we know that about him. He's more of an on-base league kind of player. I still trust him in the second half. I do think, though, the thing about Santana that's tricky is because there's so much power at first base, you can feel free to drop him. I made this point about Hanley in a 12 team, but anywhere else, like I'd stick with Santana and just kind of see what you get.
Yeah, so my last two guys, I write the free agent column, as you all probably know if you listen to this podcast, every Friday, and two guys I found myself writing about a lot this year were Cameron Maybin and Chris Taylor, and I've been really encouraged by what both of them are doing, and maybe the biggest reason why is because of the stolen bases. We've talked a lot about the sort of lack of steals in the current landscape. And Cameron Maybin, I mean, I hinted at it early, but he leads the American League in steals. He's got 24 now this year. I believe he had like 40 in 2011, back when he was with the Padres, I want to say. But he hasn't really stolen a ton of bases in recent years. And there are those just omnipresent injury concerns. And that's probably why he's available in most leagues, you know, coming into the year. He had a brutal April, but in the last month, he's hitting .293 with three home runs and 12 steals. So like we talked about with Josh Harrison on the power speed combo, you know, Maybin's doing that, but he's doing it with really elite steals totals. So I've been real encouraged with Cameron Maybin. And as far as Chris Taylor goes, he's a top 15 middle infielder this year, right now, if you go to the ESPN Player Rater. And I know that's not the end-all be-all, but Chris Taylor is going to be up there when we look at the end of the year. And obviously there are concerns about, you know, the BABIP, but he walks a lot. He goes deep into counts. I've watched a ton of Dodger games this year just because they're a fascinating team. And Chris Taylor is the guy who always surprises me. And you know, he's hitting 280 right now, but he's got 9 home runs and 10 steals. And this is a guy who could get to, I think it's more likely he gets 20 steals than 20 home runs. You know, I'd maybe put 15 as maybe the cap that I'd project for the year. But he's versatile. He plays every day. I really like Chris Taylor, so those are my guys. Real quick to wrap up the show, because we asked for listener questions, so for who the listeners wanted us to talk about. So I'll lightning round these if you guys are up for that real quick. I'll throw it. That sound good? Just worth checking.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. I'll throw it to you, Mike, first. This is from Irish Fog. He wants us to talk about Travis Shaw, who I think has as many home runs this year right now as he did all of last year, if I'm remembering correctly. I think
that's it. I'd have to look at it, but that sounds right.
He's been good.
Well, I mean, is there a question about Shaw, or you just want my...
No.
My 2 cents.
What's your 2 cents on Travis? I mean, it just feels like, I don't know what to make of Travis Shaw, because I'm kind of, I always think of him as the Boston version, you know, just because I've had so much exposure to him in the last 5 years, but
yeah,
is it different?
He's been really good, and some of it is I think he has a full-time opportunity. I always had the vibe with Boston that they didn't look at him as legitimate or somebody who could sustain, you know, anything more than what he did last year. So while I don't see him as a 35 home run, you know, 290 guy, I think he'll slip a little bit. I can still see him hitting, you know, finishing with 25 to 30 home runs and a 260, 270 batting average, and that's really good.
I got one. Travis Shaw or Ryan Healy?
Ooh.
That one just came to me. That was a good one.
That is a good one. I think I'd lean Shaw, but it's a lean.
Yeah.
They're pretty simple players.
Just for the record, I did not tell these guys in advance about any of these players, so we're off the cuff right now. I'm not holding anyone to any.
I mean, a large part of it's the ballparks too. You know, Shaw plays in Milwaukee, which is a pretty good hitter's park, and you know Healy plays in Oakland, which is still a pitcher's park, particularly where the average is concerned.
Brett, this next one comes from Justin Klein. You're going to get this question a lot when you do the TDG 500 update. I get the sense this one's going to come up a lot. Denelson Lamet of the Padres, from a dynasty standpoint, how much do you need to care about him?
A little bit, but not as much as I think a lot of people think.
Okay.
I mean, the strikeouts have been – he's struck out a ton of guys since he's been up, but he also has allowed a ton of home runs, and you know he just kind of allows a lot of hard contact. So it's a weird dichotomy. I think eventually the strikeouts are going to catch up to the hard contact. So I don't see him being anything more than sort of a, you know, back end option in mixed leagues. He'll be on the list. I'm sure, but he's probably not going to be as high as some people want him to be.
Yeah, if you play in a dynasty league, the dynasty guru of top 500. I mean, that's sort of the, I don't know what you call it, sort of the master list that you need to you know have to look at if you play in a dynasty league. Yeah. When does it come out? When does the update come out officially? Do you know?
Update should be out after the July 4th weekend.
Awesome.
Steve Gardner and previously John Hunt called the labor edition of Sports Weekly the Leviathan. That's kind of what the Dynasty Top 500 is for Dynasty. That's the same level of intensity.
That was the word I was grasping for, and I could
Leviathan?
Not, yes, I could not find it. Yeah. There we go. Nicely done, Mike.
Thank you.
This
the
question.
Labor of love.
Are you prepared for the Jarrell Cotton blowback?
It's a labor of love until anyone tries to read the comments.
I defended you on Twitter today, and it did not go well. It was there was a lot of comments about it. My mentions were blown up.
Some trolls just do not appreciate being trolled.
Yeah, I'll disagree. I'll have a healthy discussion, but like at a certain point, there's not much I can say to some people. yeah, I'm just peachy right now. This is going well. Mike, Ryan Beck wants to know how big of a deal Anthony Rizzo's second base eligibility is. I guess my question would be, it's a big deal if he gets it, but what does this do for his redraft value next year? I mean, how much higher would you bump him, or would you at all? He's already going.
This is interesting. I mean, it's kind of weird too because Rizzo is, at least relative for Rizzo, he's having a weird year in that he's not hitting quite as well as he has in the past, but he's stealing some bases. It's not like he has like a ton of steals, but he's running a little bit, and I'm kind of looking now to see what how many steals he has. He has 5 steals. Which, he's not Paul Goldschmidt, and it's not like I think Rizzo's still 17 a couple of years ago. But the reason he's valuable as a second baseman is, and we've talked about this, we talked earlier tonight, there's so many first basemen that are producing and putting up numbers. And second base, we came into the year talking about how middle infielders are stronger than you think. There's more of them out there. Well, guess what? If you look at second base right now, there are among qualifiers 7 hitters with 10 or more home runs. And if you go back and look at first baseman, and I'm sure the answer is going to be more, there are, and I'm generating this right now, there are 20 first basemen with 10 or more home runs. So yeah, you better believe if you're in a league that uses a 10 or 10 game requirement, and or even a 15-game requirement, because Rizzo will probably get there, he will be worth more at second base, just because to have that power at the position will most definitely matter. Particularly, oddly enough, like more so in a shallower league than a league like Tout Wars in the NL, where no matter what player you have, having Rizzo's stats are going to be valuable regardless of where you stick them.
Yeah, Brett, this next one's from Weber. He wants to know about Tyler Wade. Kudos to Jeff Paternostro and the BP Prospect team for putting him on the top 101. That's looking like a good call. But in a redraft, is Tyler Wade someone fantasy owners should be interested in at all?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he's gonna play in New York for a little bit. He's got some speed. He's got enough pop for it not to be zero. I think he could hit for a half decent average. It depends whether the guys who are solid hit tool guys, it's always a crapshoot as to whether they actually do so right out of the gate. But he's got the skill set to do it. I wouldn't, I don't know how much playing time he's going to get the rest of the way, but. If you gave him 300 plate appearances this year, I wouldn't be surprised if he, hit 280 with 10 to 15 steals and some pop and solid counting stats.
Rest of season, Franklin Barreto or Tyler Wade?
Barreto.
Okay.
Barreto's just going to play a ton more.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true.
Once Starling Castro comes back, Wade's not. Unless they plan on moving him to third base, I don't think he's gonna stick. And
that's an interesting wrinkle.
I mean, it's possible. He's played 10 games at third base. He's played 10 games at third base this year. It's not the kind of thing where.
Yeah. Hmm? Could he go full Ian Happ and just hit well enough that they can't possibly send him down?
I don't think he's that kind of offensive player.
Okay. I'm just trying to, give everyone a sense of who Tyler Wade could be. Mike, last one here for you. This is from Todd. He wants to know, is it time to give up on Byron Buxton in a redraft?
Oh, I thought you'd give this one to Brett.
No, I didn't. I didn't want to. Brett, you can answer if you want. Go for it.
No, I'm good.
I don't know. I would say yes. What are you waiting for? What does it look like if it comes together?
Most redraft leagues are 12 or at the most 15 teams. But you know, if you're looking at a 12 team mixed redraft, yeah, he's a shade over 200 coming into tonight. You know, he's got 4 home runs. Yeah, he's stealing bases, and you know, we saw last year when you know he had a hot month and he hit some home runs, but you know, honestly, if you're in a redraft and you're in that position where you have a choice between Buxton and a number of hitters on the free agent pool, I just don't see what you're going to get from him the rest of the way predictably that's going to be demonstrably better. He's in the lineup for his defense. Like, apparently people were raving tonight about a catch that he almost made against the Red Sox.
Almost.
Well, they pretty much said, if Buxton can't get to it, nobody, you know, is going to get to it, which is high praise. So you have that problem, too. Buxton could get 500 plate appearances and hit 200 because of his defense. So I'd drop him in a redraft, my answer.
Yeah.
Buxton's like the opposite of the Ryan Zimmerman thing, where Zimmerman was so good in April that it kind of it understates how good he's been since. Buxton was so bad in April that it's overstated how good he's been since. And since May, since the beginning of May, he's hitting .223, .281, .345. That's if you take out his shitty start.
Whoa.
He's stealing bases, but he's not very good.
No, you can't strike out that many times and hit for that little amount of power. Unless you're stealing bases at a Billy Hamilton, right? There's really no other way. Nathan Longfield wants us to talk about Kyle Schwarber, but we've kind of done that. We've done that for a while now. There's not a lot to say. He'll be back at some point, and we hope he hits. And people forget that he missed all last year with a torn ACL. So we're not going to tread that ground again. Last one comes from someone named George Bissell. This question is for you, Brett. Ruby De La Rosa came back, and he looks fantastic. He's throwing 97 to 99 with the fastball, the slider 84, 86. He has faced 8 batters and struck out 5 of them. He's allowed 1 hit. I've always thought he'd be a lights-out reliever and that they should use him in the bullpen. It's finally happening. Does Ruby De La Rosa get saves at some point this year?
No. Don't do this to yourself, George.
Come on. He looks so good. This is the Ruby I've always wanted.
This is the Ruby you've always wanted, but I'm going to give you a stat line a second, and then you're going to tell me what it is. 17 and two-thirds innings, 19 strikeouts, 0.00 ERA, and I have to do the math on top of my head, about a 0.60 whip. What is that?
I don't know. What?
That is what Fernando Rodney has done since the beginning of May.
Oh, man. I knew you were going to do that. Fernando Rodney, to his credit, he has been good. I will give him that. But it's still Fernando Rodney, and they're in a playoff race. I don't know. I'm just saying. In September, you know, I don't know.
Do you know how many saves Fernando Rodney has blown this year?
Probably like one.
One.
Yeah.
Exactly
it was like
one.
April, like the
He's
first
not game. Going anywhere.
All right. But on talent, here's my point. On talent, Ruby De La Rosa, he might be the most talented guy in that bullpen now.
I don't know.
Oh my God. I'm just saying, I'm 1,000% in on him now. He looks unbelievable. I'm just very excited about it. I want to tell the world. I don't know how
you seem very excited about it, George.
What does Ron Burgundy say? I had a microphone and a podcast, so that's how I'm showing my affection for Ruby. All right, that's going to do it. Let's take a break and wrap up the show. Mm-hmm. we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 139 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. That's how you can read all of us on baseballperspectives.com. If you sign up for the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Brett is at BrettSayerBP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously. We'll read them on the air if you leave us a review. As I showed earlier tonight, if you leave us a good one, we'll absolutely read it. BP Ballpark events are back. We have the one coming up this Saturday at PNC Park. It's at Citi Field. Tickets are done. You can't get tickets to it anymore, but it's going to be fun. These guys will be there. The one coming up on July 15th is at PNC Park in Pittsburgh. You can still get tickets for that. Harry Pavlidis, Craig Goldstein, many others from BP, and some other special guests are going to be there. Get your tickets today.
Mike's going to be there.
That's right.
Mike, the guy on the call with you.
I'll be at both of them. I'm among the more of your favorites.
I've forgotten that you were going, Mike. You've only told me like 5 times, so... It's late, all right? Give me a break. I just talked about Ruby De La Rosa. I can't focus anymore. So that one's on July 15th. There's one in Minnesota on August 5th. You should get your tickets at BP. So that's going to do it. We're off next week for the 4th of July. Hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday. And we'll talk to you again the week after. So good luck, everybody. Thanks for listening. And enjoy the 4th.
See you in 2 weeks.
Enjoy the fireworks.
That should be our tagline every week. Enjoy the fireworks.
Yeah.
So I will see you Saturday, Brett.
Yeah, you absolutely will.
Yeah, hopefully the subway will get there on time. Talk about Tyler Austin.
I watched him hit 3 home runs off Roenis Elias in 5 innings once. It was amazing.
Yeah, this it turns out this vote bid was invalidated anyway.
Ah.
Okay. Voter disenfranchisement.
What?
I said voter disenfranchisement.
Oh, you made a pun. I didn't even realize it.
I did a butterfly ballot, so it wasn't allowed. You can do a lot of these.